Yona Perek Revi'i. Vayera el Yona ra'agedola vayichal. And so Yona feels that this is terrible, and that something has gone terribly wrong. Vayitpalel al Adonai, vayomar, ana Adonai alo zed vari adayoti el admati. This is exactly what I said before I ever got here. That's the reason I ran away. Because yadati ki ata el chanun v'rachum erchapayim v'rav chesed v'nicham al hara'ah. Here quoting exactly the words of Moshe Rabbeinu, except for one word. Emet. There's no emet. There's no v'rav chesed v'emet. And there's just Rav Chesed v'nicham al hara'ah. Obviously, there's a reason that he leaves out the emet, and it's a very chutzpahdik attack on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he's saying that this is not emet. And I always knew that you were going to be menachim al hara'ah. And therefore, as Rashi says, Amar achshav yamru akum shani navi asheker. So in other words, Rashi's taking into consideration that even though I always understood, after the Maisa in the Yam, I understood that there was a basis of accepting their tshuva. But now I have a new concern, and I knew that this was going to be the new concern. And that is that they're going to say that I'm a Navi Sheker. Now I want to die. I don't want to live in this kind of world. This is paraphrasing now his Rebbe, Eliyahu HaNavi, who went and was Yoshev underneath a rotan. And this is what he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo tov ani me'avotai, kach met nafshi, I'm ready to retire. I want out of here. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not very impressed with his argument, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response is, Vayomer Adonai, Hayitev Karala, are you really good and angry? To which he doesn't reply. What happened to the reply? Now later on, when he's upset about the kikayon, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, so tell me, Hayitev Choralecha ala kikayon. There he answers. But there he says, Hayitev Chorali ad mavet. Oh boy, am I am furious. Can't take it anymore. Over here he doesn't answer a word. And instead, all it says is, so what did we need the sarcastic comment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It doesn't add anything when it says Vayetzi Min HaYir. So there's a number of issues that we're going to have to address over here. It might be kedai to first note all of the craziness of the parak, and then go back and try to make some type of seder in which everything ties in perfectly. So our first problem is, what is he upset about? Our second problem is, assuming that he's upset about the Navi Sheker thing, then why didn't he think of that before he came here? Why did he only have Charata from the Teshuvah, and what was Charata? Did something changed about the Teshuvah that they did than the Teshuvah that he expected? That he should say, now I'm still sticking with what I said before? And if he is still sticking with what he said before, why then does Rashi change what he's saying into the Navi Sheker stress, as opposed to the Shinui of the Teshuvah? That was question number one. Question number two is, why does he leave out the emet? What does he feel is not emet in what it was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did? Thirdly, why doesn't he respond to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sarcastic comment? Furthermore, how is Vayetziyu Anam Min HaYir, Vayeshem Mikenem LaYir in any way connected to the opening of this Stuma, Parsha Stuma, which is Vayomer Hashem Hayitev Chorala? Apparently, it's completely, it might as well, it makes a lot more sense to have Vayomer Hashem Hayitev Chorala at the end of the previous Stuma, and then start new Parsha. Vayetze Yonah Min HaYir, Vayeshev Mikedem LaYir. What in the world is the closing pasuk of the discussion about the Tefillah of Yonah? This is a Tefillah, mind you. Ona Hashem. What's the Ona Hashem? Halo Zedvarai. There's no Ona Hashem. Is he asking, in fact, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should change his mind about the nature of the Teshuvah of Nineveh, and instead of supporting them, he should destroy them? Perhaps, because he does go out, so apparently he was not convinced that it was all over. So as the Mitzudei says, Ki chashav ulai lo yamdu b'teshuvatam v'tachzor ha'gzera l'makoma. Yeah, maybe he was hoping there'd still be some action. You know, you can watch some atom bombs. It's always fun to see a little bit of destruction, kill off a few million people. Why not? Okay, so that's another problem. In what exactly did he go out to see, and why did he build a sukkah specifically? So it says, and this, of course, as we've always seen, this is the sukkah that is the transition from Minchan Yom HaKippurim of the elements of tshuva to Chag HaSukkot, which is the closing element of Yonah. He makes a sukkah. He sits underneath the sukkah batzel, and he's going to wait there ad asher yireh ma yiyeh ba'ir, to know what's going to happen. The next pasuk is Vayaman Adonai Elohim Kikayon. Now all of a sudden we have a change. We started off with Elohim, Vayar Elohim et Maasehim. We went to the tefillah of Yonah, which was to the Shema Miyuchad, Yudke Vavke. And now we suddenly get to the first usage of Hashem Elohim. Now, Hashem Elohim is extremely important because in the Seder of Bereshit, it's exactly what we find. Initially, we find Bereshit Bara Elohim, and then afterwards, we find Biyom Bara Hashem Elohim Eretz V'Shamayim. So this Hashem Elohim means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Makdim Midas Rachamim to Midas Hadin. Somehow or other, this is supposed to be an expression of the Hanhoga that is Vayaman the Kikayon. Now, Vayaman the Kikayon, we've had a lot of Vayamans. So we had the Vayaman the dog. We had, what else did we have Vayaman?
There's the Talad also.
It's coming.
Right.
So far, the dog we said was
the Ruach, no?
Was Mimuna here?
No, the first parak in the boat, wasn't that Vayimah?
Hey, too.
Oh,
thank you very much. Hey, too. So we have over here a Vayiman Hashem Elokim Kikayon. Before we said Vayiman, it meant it was Vayiman Misheshet Yimei Bereshit. So this was Mukham all the time. Over here, obviously, this Kikayon just grew up now. So then the Vayiman must mean something else than it meant before. What would that be? Well, the idea of being Mamana, the dog from Sheshit Yimei Bereshit, is one element of Hachana. Remember, the aspect of Hachana, which is Nagi Ala Alocha, is that something is done for a particular kivun. It's done for that purpose. It's not viewed as just a random result of the world. It means that everything that has taken place to allow this to happen at this time, at this point, is part of what it was that was taken into consideration in the thing. Is that important? Must be, because obviously it's going to change the relationship that he has to the Kikayon. Otherwise, I don't need to know what Shema Isakidusha were behind this, and I don't even know that it was needed to be Vayaman. All I need to know is Vayigdal Kikayon Mialayona. True? I mean, the dog, I understand that Shaloka Derech HaTeva and so on and so forth. The Kikayon to grow up is not Shaloka Derech HaTeva. So there's something that the Pasuk is telling us here about a total change of Anhaga and about a specific Hachana for a specific purpose. Which means that this Kikayon is going to serve as something that is going to be the argument of the entire book. And that is part of its Hachana, which we'll have to see. What do we need the Kikayon for anyway? Vayal me'ali yonali yot tzel. It just said a moment ago he was sitting in the tzel. Vayeshev tachter betzel. So what do we know? What do we need to have tzel al roshova tzelo mirato? He already had that tzel. And why is he so happy about it? Vaismach Yonala Kikayon Simcha Gedolah. Simcha Gedolah is the lashon that we find in Sefer Ezra about the Simcha of Rosh Hashanah specifically. Chedvat Hashem Imi Uzchem. Not Chedvat Hashem has to do with Maisa Bereshis. Is that what Yonah is discovering over here? So obviously the pasuk is telling me the Kikayon is not there in the same way that the tzel of the sukkah is there. It's offering him something unique. And the very concept of simcha that we had associated with sukkah, he didn't find in the sukkah, he found in the Kikayon. Okay? Now, in terms of midas adin, vayimana Elohim, tolat ba'alot ha'shachar lemechorat, the very next morning, the sun rises, comes along a little worm, v'atachat ha'kikayon vayivash, it destroys the roots of the Kikayon dries up in the sun. And so, sure enough, Vayik Yizrach HaShemesh, now comes along the next Vayaman. Now Vayaman Elohim Ruach Kadim Charishit, now we have a very special anhaga of a horrible Chamsin, and the Chamsin dries up the Kikayon to nothing and starts banging on the head of Yonah, Vatach HaShemesh HaRosh Yonah, until he's finally fainting from the heat. Now he wants to die. Now he said before, Kach nat nafshi mimeni ki tov moti mechayai. So he now repeats himself. Vayomer, tov moti mechayai. So, how Elohim asks Yonah, so now are you good and upset? Heitev karav achalaki kayam. This time he responds, Heitev karendi ad maven. I mean, the Kikayon is more important than the altar. Before, he didn't have any response. Now he is so embittered that he actually responds to the sarcasm. And then Hashem makes the most absurd argument. Vayomer Adonai, back to the Shem Hashem. Ata chasta la Kikayon asher lo amalta bo velo gidalta. Look how much you cared about the Kikayon. You didn't even put anything into it. Asher shebin laila ya. Ubin Laila Ava. Grew up one night, was lost in the next night. It's here today, gone tomorrow kind of thing. What's the big importance of it? Understand. The man is fainting from the heat. He's happy, not about the Kikayon. If you would have made him a shopping center over his head, he also would have been happy. You would have put in an air conditioner, he would have been happy too. No, what would you say? Made the same argument on an air conditioner. Well, what in the world is going on? And what does that have to do with it? I mean, he has a right to say, for heaven's sakes, this is something that I derive personal benefit out of. And obviously, I am extremely hurt by the whole experience, and by the way that it was just casually thrown away, as if my comfort means nothing. And my being in a position of almost at the verge of death, nobody gives a damn about. Of course I'm upset. What does that have to do with Nineveh? Yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu insists, well, it's exactly the same thing. Except that I put work into Nineveh. You didn't even put any work into Nineveh. I mean, this is irrelevant to the entire tshuva argument. It's irrelevant to everything that we've been discussing until now. It has nothing to do with Nevi'ahs and whether they're going to say it's a Navi Sheker, not a Navi Sheker. I mean, the whole thing is crazy. We keep changing our theme. First, the theme is Goyim Krovei Tshuva. Then the theme becomes the Levi'ahs. That changes us to another theme of Nevi'ei Sheker. And then that comes to a question of how easy it is to get rid of things that don't seem to fit what we're insisting on. I mean, I understand this is a nice argument to make at the very beginning when you're dining, well, if the Krovei Tshuva, in order not to get any type of kitrug on Yisrael, we should let them all drop dead. Who cares? Why be ma'aser them b'tshuva? I don't want to be ma'aser them b'tshuva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had said to him, listen, it's a big city. What, are you going to be mafkir millions of people? I mean, we're talking about a population of Adam that is roy to count in a minion. If you multiply that times women and children, it's an enormous city. You want to drop an atom bomb on this city, and you don't care about even trying. I would have understood, okay, that's an argument. You have to at least care about the city. We're not talking about that anymore. So how are we going back to the original questions, which apparently had already been answered, and Yonah was already willing to address, and he went Vayokom Yonah, he went up, he got up, and he was Makabal, whatever it'll be, I will address Nineveh. And not only that, but we found that Nineveh was unusually responsive. And that indeed all of his arguments of Krovei Tshuva were exactly what happened. So we have a lot of problems with this Vesperik, and it demands of us a restructuring in our minds of what is actually happening in the course of the book, so that the understanding that we had, that the nature of the book is the way that Chazal understand the nature of the book. It's not about Nineveh. It's not a book about Nineveh at all. Nineveh is being used. That's all. It's a book about the argument between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Ki'im Gilad Sodo Al Avadav HaNeviim, about the nature of Teshuvah and the way in which humanity relates to Teshuvah. That's the main issue. The very fact that we have found that the one person that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Moneya Teshuvah from, in order to prove to Klal Yisrael the concept of Pira'on, is the Melech of this city, and is the reason that this city is responsive, and is a complete mirror image of not allowing Teshuvah in order that Yisrael should learn what Pira'on is, now becomes the Melech of the city that's supposed to teach Klal Yisrael what Teshuvah is, to be Monea Pira'on, is outrageous. It is such a clear-cut key that if it doesn't revolve around that issue, then I don't know what it could possibly revolve on, right? I mean, it's an entire parak in the Rambam about the nature of Paro and Teshuvah. Not only that, but as we saw yesterday, in the context of that parak, the Rambam proves that what it is that causes HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be Monea Teshuvah, he brings it from the Pasuk, is the fact that they're Bozim Devarav Umita'ateim B'Neviyav. And that this causes Chemat Hashem Ma'amo. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making fun of Yonah. Haitev Chara Lecha. You were the one, Chemat Hashem. You were the one who gets angry about this. Now all of a sudden, I'm the idiot. I don't understand the consistency over here. And it showed us the Chatchila that it was totally involved in the way that people relate not to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but to his messengers. Malivim b'malachei Elohim. The malachei are the ones that he sends. Mitateim b'neviyav. And that's exactly what is going on over here. Ad shenit chayvulim noa mehem atashuva. Shiyah marpa. You're saying adle in marpa? That is the marpa. Leficha chatubatara niachazeket leif paro. There's no way that we're going to let him. So then why did he pretend that he wanted their teshuvah? If he already said it's not going to happen, that is to teach Lebai Olam, to teach everyone that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to be Moneya Teshuvah, there's nothing he's going to be able to do. Yamut Prishosha Sabit Kilo Biritsono. My God, mamish a mirror image of Sefer Yonah, so that Chazal's identification of the same king is, I mean, it's like bullseye. It's exactly what you would expect to see, right? Astounding. Now, obviously, here he's talking about Teshuvah, not as a tikkun at all. He's talking about HaTeshuvah Ketris Lifnei HaPuranut. This is a Teshuvah that is meant to protect me from the consequences of my actions. So Paro sees, as his Avonim speak out, Haterem Tedak Yavdam Mitzrayim. Don't you understand? It's over, man. This country is finished. You don't let them out, we're dead. You're right. Goes running after them, and then he's unable to follow through, right? So, there's a number of layers to our full understanding of what's happening here. Layer number one is that we mentioned yesterday what appeared to be a machlokas, the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. We started pointing out that it's not really a machlokas, and that there's two levels. There's the Teshuvah, as Ketriz Bifnei Puranut, which is what the Bavli is talking about. This is a valid tshuva. If Lamaisa, it's Maaseihem or Metukanim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will accept that, except in locations where it's not meant to be accepted because of the Dayan He'emet. You'll notice that the usage of the word Ha-Elohim that we have over here is not Stam Elohim, the Bala Kochot Kulam, but Ha-Elohim means in that specific Midah of Din, which is that what you would expect is Midat HaDin that is being Toveya, something better than a tshuva. That's Ketriz Bifnei HaPuranot. And Afal Piken, it's specifically telling Yonah that his tainas are wrong. So what are his tainas? The Lashon of the Yerushalmi, as we said, we saw it a number of places. We had Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says this entire thing was Rama'ut. L'chora, on the surface, Rama'ut means that he's big Mefarish. Not like the Bavli. Bavli says that they were Shiduat Maaseyem. I mean, it does say in the Pasuk, Vayar Elohim et Maaseyem, Kishovu Bidarka Mara. I understand what he says, that it's Rama'ut. How can he ignore the Pasuk? So in other words, he's talking about some darga of Rama'ut that the Bavli was not interested in. Furthermore, we found the other Shitot there, Bikapehem, but only Bikapehem, not if we didn't know about it. And what was the Rama'ut? Chutzpah. That they took advantage, b'chotzka, they spoke, it's all Yerushalmi. They spoke b'chotzpa, because they put HaKadosh Baruch Hu into position. What's he supposed to say? I'm going to argue with you. You're telling me I don't care about animals, and I don't care, I mean, all of the modern things, you know. God, I mean, come on, you know, this is the SPCA. Well, you're going to kill the animals. I mean, you're expecting us to learn from your Hanhaga. When you don't care about human beings, we're supposed to care about the animals and let them nurse their children. If you don't care about the world, why should we care about the world? We look to you to teach us. Oh, for God's sake. Classic, mom. The humanitarian arguments, the animal rights arguments, all the arguments that the rabbi in the conservative shul or the orthodox or the praxi shul, it's exactly what they'll talk, exactly. Doesn't care. We have no answer to Kadosh Baruch Hu told Avram to sacrifice his child. Obviously, Avram was supposed to say never. We don't abuse children. Okay? Literally, they say Orthodox rabbis. Sugar. Or Mishigasin like this. Exactly the same chutzpah that the Yerushalmi identifies as being the approach of Nineveh. What does that mean? So I would suggest like this, that there are indeed two completely different issues that are involved here. Remember that what it was that Yonah had seen in the water that was beneath the sea, and the truth is that in the story of water and in the story of Bina that we spoke about in the Yom, there's something unique. And we saw that it relates to the Evan HaShasiyah, you recall, right? That he saw the Evan HaShasiyah, he saw the Amudim of Yerushalayim, that it's Emer al Amayim. Now to us that sounds ridiculous, because the Yam is contained on the surface of the earth, and it doesn't go underneath Yerushalayim. However, there is not, that itself is a prejudice. What sense is it a prejudice? We're used to thinking of our planet as the surface of our planet. Now, it's true that the surface of our planet, which is a tiny, tiny piece of our planet, tiny. So we have the first number of miles down, you know. Do you like the first number of miles down? Looks, everything looks pretty solid. So we've got, you know, we've got this land cover, we've got the mantle, we've got yamim that are included within it, and then we've got the areas that are raised above sea level, and there's no interrelationship between the two. Remember the Gemara that we had in Pesachim? Echad Mishishim. Echad Mishishim of Ghana. We point that out over there. You think that you're living on a pleasant planet. So remarkably, I'm sure you'll find it on the internet if you look, the amount of water that is contained beneath the mantle of the Earth, the range of estimate of the possible water is 60 times. Unbelievable. Shishim. Exactly 60. Shishim, the amount of water that is contained in the Yamim above the planet. The question is, where did all that water come from? Because we don't have enough information about what's going on. We don't know how much of the Earth is metallic, molten metal. We don't know how much of it is just liquid water under immense pressure and heat, obviously, which changes the characteristics of the waves that bounce off of it anyway. So we don't have a clear understanding. Where did the water come from? That's a major problem. Where did the water come from? Because the formation of the inner planets was too hot for water to be retained. There's all types of deities. And still, nobody really knows. And originally, they thought comets. So we have all of those snowballs hitting the Earth. There's enough snowballs to bring enough. Unfortunately, and as comets were visited by spaceships and spectroscopic samples were taken of the water, turns out that the water on comets is not the same as the water on the Yamim of the Earth. So there went the comet theory. Okay. This is a terrible blow because nobody can figure out where the heck the water is coming from.
Creative change going on?
No, right? Not in that kind of thing. No, because there's radioactive components that don't change over the world that have a clear cut decay time. So something's wrong.
That's all comets share this?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because it formed at the same time. All the comets formed way out where we would expect that we have, you know, dirty snowballs, a lot of dirty snowballs. Dirty snowballs. Yeah. So, okay, then there was another Shita. Maybe it was brought in from asteroids closer to the outer planets, and then they visited an asteroid. That didn't work either. There's now a lot of controversy. They're trying to come up with a new Shita. But everybody is beta except for some maniacs that have their own Shitas. I'm saying, you know, the kind of people that advertise on, you know, on Amazon, read their books, they explain it. Those kind of people. But in terms of serious explanations, it is not clear where that water came from. Now, we know that in Rashi tells us there's Eretz v'Shamayim. Shamayim stands for, bringing the Chazal, Shamayim. So that the source of water was not the Rigavim, which is the Eved HaShisiyah. Right? That means that the relationship of the Yamim to the concept of Gishamim, in a much deeper sense of Gishamim, of water being brought to you from elsewhere, is profound. So that means we're talking about over here something that has to do with an Amida of the nature of what the Earth is. Now, we understood L'chatchila that limits, the only thing that he recognized there was the idea of the Chibur, the Levyosin, from the moments of creation. And it brought him face to face with the fact that the Earth as a whole, the universe as a whole, is driven by the interrelationships that lead to integration and sustainability, which in themselves is part of tshuva. And for the first time, he understood how it's possible to give a haftacha. There's a haftacha that Yisrael should be chazer b'tshuva, but that's because they're dovuk to reishis. So that the reishis b'shvil Yisrael shenikra reishis means that by definition, the essence of Yisrael is that they are part of this drivenness to find tikkun. However, he came to understand that the underlying nature is that even when I am acting to protect myself, I'm still acting in a way that recognizes exactly as what happened to Nineveh. What happens to Nineveh? They recognized on their own. They vayiru et Elohim, and they recognized on their own without any kind of tochach, as we saw yesterday, that something is terribly wrong. And they responded instantly. And we thought That is exactly what we would want, and that ties in with Yonah. And it would have tied in with Yonah if it wouldn't have been for the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is coming to point out that there was a different element in the tshuva of Nineveh that shattered Yonah's expectations. And what was that? Not that Goyim Akrove tshuva, he understood that, expected that, and Adarabba wanted Yisrael to learn that. The question is, being Krovei Teshuva simply means being responsive as a human being to things that the world as a whole is expressive of, which of course includes the behemoths as well. If we're going all the way back to the marble, then we're talking about the Hashchasa of behemot also. Yishrit kol basar darko ala aretz. So the animals do have something to do with the story. We did not accept into the Teva animals that were part of that Hashchata, even though we understand that the Hashchata was part of the way the planet was running. It was not part of the choices, as animals don't make choices. But nonetheless, it meant that what was preserved for the future was sustainable, was a choice of those things that would be closer to sustainability, Yi'ilut, and the way the world is meant to be, right? Which related to his Brit Milah. That's exactly what he was showing the Levi Yosef. Was there room for Brit Milah in Nineveh? That's the issue. Unbelievably, the Yerushalmi has identified an extremely dangerous tendency of humanity, and it is a tendency which, in Yonah's opinion, destroyed any chance of actually achieving tshuva. And in fact, the Medrash says, the Arboim Yom of Nineveh translated into Arboim Shana that this movement lasted, after which they were worse off than they were before. Now obviously, if the Medrash is saying that they were worse off than they were before, it means that this process is what allowed them to be worse off than they were before. Otherwise, what's the point? They're worse off. Who cares? Worse off, better. I mean, that's not the issue. We were tailoring them for Arboim Shana. So what? So in other words, we are vindicating what it was that Yonah is saying. They were worse than they were before. And he's finding the reason they were worse because they were let off with this nonsense. Not just because it was a natural progression of getting worse and worse. Because it wasn't getting worse and worse. For a while it was better. So why did it get worse? Yonah's taina is that Rama'ut and Chutzpah is essentially Chanifa. If you are coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you are utilizing lies to achieve your ends, which are being projected as being interested, kind, involved, you're living essentially in our times. This is what our times are like. Exactly. Every guy cares much more about the world than God does. Much more. As a matter of fact, God never even thought about all the things that we have to worry about. We figured out things to worry about that no human being in history has ever thought about. So we have identified as evil things that everybody thought was just hunky-dory until very recently. All of a sudden, everything is evil. We have completely different ideas. We have different ideas about the poor. We have different ideas about sexuality. We have different ideas about children. We have different ideas about education. But our ideas are much more sophisticated than God's or than anything that humanity ever understood before. So if we come to discuss on Yom Kippur, the Holocaust, and we are smarter than God and we recognize that this is a horrible thing, and that it's only because God, whatever, you know, is waiting for humanity to grow, whatever nonsense people will come up with. All of the modern and liberal arguments in which humanity has finally achieved a planet that is better than God's. And remarkably, they have. That is the most striking aspect of all. In other words, all of the things that we find in the Bible are primitive. Go kill people for adultery. That's ridiculous. You know, you accept human beings, different strokes, different folks. Everything is fine. you know, people will do just perfectly. And if we could focus on our money, then in the end the poor get richer. And now the poorest of the poor are richer than the greatest malachim. And if we focus on our science and our development, then we don't have to be dependent on the curses that God gave the earth and what poor Adam HaRishon was involved in. And look what Noah tried to do. His big achievement was a plow. My God, we've got tractors and laser beams. And I mean, everything can be done with robots. No human being has to be a slave to the earth anymore. We've done a much better job than any biblical vision of what this earth could be. And you know what? They're 100% right. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine an earth run by Shas? Or run by Agudat Yisrael or whatever it is? And God help us. So at least we live on a planet where so much of humanity is free. They can make their own choices. Don't have to worry about religious insanity. And that people are becoming more aware, achieving. And this is the argument. Tainit Yona, that if this is the approach to Teshuvah, then it doesn't fit the Liv Yosin at all. It's the antithesis of the Liv Yosin. If you tell me that you recognize and you buy into Yirat Elohim, and you recognize you have to change your Maisin, you recognize that you cannot construct a reality of your own. Okay. What that means is that ultimately, you are not metata'in b'malachav and b'nevi'av. You accept nevi'ut. You don't make a joke when somebody tells you we have problems. You're right. We have serious problems. You don't turn your back and believe you can manipulate God. But what these people are doing is pure manipulation. They're taking modern arguments, putting God into a position. So what they would, many examples. Aluv ve'eno aluv, says the Gemara. I mean, look, God, you have everything. We are miskenim, we're aluvim. I mean, who should be mavater, really? You know, you're much bigger than we are. Why don't you be mavater? Or they said, see all these animals? What do animals know? What do we know? I mean, we're just people. Are you really going to hold us accountable? What am I going to say? This is all part of the same argument. It's that old song from Les Mis. I dreamt that God would be forgiving, you know. And then you find out it's a rotten world. God isn't forgiving. Everything is terrible. You know, if there were a God, don't you think he would care a little bit about the poor and son of the master of the house? Blah, blah, blah. So you put people in this position. Says Yonah, therefore, I am now insisting that what I said about what it would cause, Lagabi Nevi'ut, these people aren't going to say, well, he always said, Ninve mitapechet could mean either way. That's not what they're going to say. They're going to say, it isn't meant seriously. It's all part of what you do with it. And therefore, if what you want to do is make the world a moral place, you do it your way. But you certainly don't need to follow. I mean, come on, this guy's a primitive, a madman. He's walking around. The end of the world is near. I mean, for God's sake. There's people like that all over the place. The fact that he's pointed out something is true, yes, we will respond to that in our own way. He's right. And we'll deal with it. That, says Yonah, is called metata'im b'nevi'av. So by defining teshuva downward and defining nevi'us downward, what you end up is exactly what the Gemara says about Hanifa. And that is the moment people start buying into phoniness. Which is exactly what happened with the story when Agrippas was sitting there and he's crying about the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you're not allowed to be Ish Nochri, and he's crying, and everybody says, don't worry, we love you. You know, we're very tolerant. You're a great king. Doesn't matter. Yichus, nu, Mela, Achino Ata, who cares? Just the Gemara says, from that day on, nobody can speak about objective morality. There's no objective morality. Everybody's got a take on morality. So if that's the case, not only is Ninveh not useful, it's a short circuit of everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is putting into the world, because the human relationship to to this idea. Obviously, what is the human contribution to the world of complexity that I identified in the Yam? The human element is the Bris Milah that I showed the Lev Yosef. So if you're telling me it does not require human consciousness, it requires human game playing, we could play games without a Brit Milah and there's nothing for the Lev Yosef to be worried about. Because this can go on forever into any type of insanity that you'd want. And all it's going to lead to is much worse in the end. The most sophisticated societies will turn out to be the most barbaric. The ones who are absolutely filled with the joy of music and poetry and science, they are the barbaric murderers. So do we have to wait until we watch this happen? Or can we stop it right now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Stop it right now. Because you accept Nineveh, the next thing you're going to do is say, forgive the Germans, they're really good people. And some of my best friends are Jews. Because that's where it leads to. It's exactly the same process. And the Medrash says to Enoch Inami, 40 years later, what did they go after? To destroy Klal Yisrael. That was Asher, and he understood that Asher. That's what he understood initially. And that's the element of Yonah that comes from Shevet Asher, which is connected Asher. What is the chelik of Asher? Barzel Nechoshet Min Alecha. Rashi says Asher was the Shevet that kept Goyim out of Eretz Yisrael. So Zevulun was the Shevet that brought them in. He was from Zevulun. His father is from Zevulun. His mother is from Asher. So that means that he had clear standards. You want to come in and be part of my acceptance. Shem Yizbuch Zivchei Tzedek, which is exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu said about Zevulun. That's how it started with the sailors. You want to play games? You ain't coming anywhere. And that's the Asher as Barzav Nechoshet Min Alecha. We seal up this country against any type of idiots coming around here. Not acceptable. When indeed do the Goyim come to Eretz Yisrael and they are not only acceptable, but insisted on being here? Chag HaSukkot. Now this leads us directly to the issue of Yonah having discovered his Nevias, the Chag HaSukkot. In order for us to understand what is going on, we need to recognize another path. So, Jeffrey, we're finally getting around to your points. This is Jeffrey Dworkin, and he's been bothered by this a long time. Take a look at this pattern. We start off by talking about a sar gadol, an ir gadolah, a ruach gadolah. The malachim have yir agadolah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ve'eman adag gadol. A ra'ah gedolah. Here is Yonah experiencing a simcha gedolah. I mean, for heaven's sakes, don't we have any other adjectives? I mean, what is this primitive adjective? Everything is big. Very big. It sounds like a two-year-old. Big wind, big city, big fish. They put out a movie like that, Big Fish, to talk about how a big fish. Well, of course, everybody has stories about the big fish, you know. Is this supposed to be a big fish? And if it is, it's Gedolah Elohim. God also thinks it's a big fish, but it's a very big city for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know. I mean, come on, you've got quasars. I mean, we're talking about a big city of like a million organisms. This is big. God's really impressed. Wow, hey, there's a serious, I mean, the whole damn planet is so tiny you can barely make it out. You know, what are we talking about? A big city that is, oh my heavens, 3 days of tiny human walking. Woo! Heavy duty, man, heavy duty. Hey, Malachim, look at this. Never seen a planet like this one. Never seen a city like this one. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. So what, we're making a joke out of the whole thing that this is the big fish story. And the end, of course, with its sarcasm, is building on exactly that, isn't it? In other words, what is the sarcasm doing? The sarcasm is putting everything into focus. You're very upset, aren't you? Very upset. I want to know if you're upset enough. Are you very, very upset? Or are you just very upset? I mean, it's almost as if we have this play on words. Yeah? Mm-hmm. No? As if we have a play on words? Yeah. And yet, the second time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, are you very upset? He says, yes, I am. You're damn right I am. What changed between the first time where obviously he took the sarcasm in stride as being a worthy sarcasm? Yeah, I know, I'm feeling, you're right, it's a little bit exaggerated. Oh no.
Yes.
Oh no. Get the stuff in. Quick.